We're looking at the Lamentations, the five laments that are attached to the back of Jeremiah's prophecy. They're part of the great collection of wisdom literature in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew Bible. They're part of the books of poetry which resonate with life on planet Earth in relationship to God as understood through the covenant between God and ancient Israel. We've looked at a variety of the different types of wisdom literature, focusing now on the Lamentations. We've come to Lament number 3. Lament 1 was an acrostic poem, 22 times 3 couplets, that is 3 double lines of Hebrew poetry. In the series of 3, only the first letter of that first couplet is a consecutive letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and that was true also for Lament 2. Lament 1 was really the voice of the woman Jerusalem, who was now in terrible loss and pain because Jerusalem had been destroyed. So you have this sense of a personification of the city after the Babylonians have destroyed it. Lament 2 was very similar, the same kind of acrostic poem with the same structure, but now more the voice and perspective of heaven, in which the justification of God's actions in allowing the Babylonians to do this is put forward, and all tied into the covenant, particularly the curses of the covenant, but also with elements of and hints at hope and restoration still to come. The granddaddy, or the big one, the finest expression of all of this is in Lament number 3, which we're going to take a look at this time. Here, there are again 3 couplets in each section and 22 sections, so we have the whole of the Hebrew alphabet represented with the successive letters of the Hebrew alphabet starting each section. But what's different in this third lament is that rather than just as in the first and the second laments, just the first among those 3 couplets in a section beginning with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet, in this case, each of the 3 successive couplets begins with that letter of the Hebrew alphabet. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that this one, even more than the others, has been carefully crafted, has been very finely tuned so that someone spent a lot of time trying to create these laments as expressions of everything that one can say from beginning to end, or from A to Z, or from first to last. And whereas Laments 1 and 2 each speak with a different voice and do so in a nicely structured way, Lament 3 speaks with another voice still, but in a very profoundly, deeply structured way so that it resonates even more fully with all of the lines of Hebrew poetry. What's true also in Lament 3 is that there's more notes of hope. Whereas Lament 1 was almost without hope, I'm sitting here devastated, and Lament 2 was, yeah, you had it coming, but God has not forgotten you. Lament 3 is much more of a dialogue between God and God's people. The personification is now not of a woman who has seen affliction, but a man who has seen affliction. So it's a personification similar to that of Lament 1. Only this time, it's a man who's aware of what's happening and wrestles with God. Doesn't just sit there saying, oh, woe is me, but wrestles with God about what next. I am the man who has seen affliction by the rod of the Lord's wrath. He has driven me away and made me walk in the darkness rather than the light. Indeed, he has turned his hand against me again and again all day long. Now, notice in our formulation of these laments, that in Laments 1 and 2, that would have been the first verse, because it was the first section, 3 usually synonymous parallelism couplets put together, and the first of those would begin with the letter Aleph, because it's the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet. In this case, verses 1, 2, and 3 each begin in the Hebrew with the letter Aleph. Verses 4, 5, and 6, Beit, verses 7, 8, 9, with Gimel, etc., all the way through the alphabet of the Hebrews. So you understand that there's much more crafting done. And notice now, many of the similar themes, personification, the voice is that of a man similar in condition or situation to the woman in Lament number 1. He has made my skin and my flesh grow old and has broken my bones. He has besieged me and surrounded me with bitterness and hardship. He has made me dwell in darkness like those long dead. He has walled me in so I cannot escape. He has weighed me down with chains. Even when I call out for help, he shuts out my prayer. He has barred my way with blocks of stone. He has made my paths crooked like a bear lying in wait, like a lion in hiding. He has dragged me from the path and mangled me and left me without help. He drew his bow and made me the target of his arrows. He pierced my heart with arrows from his quiver. I became a laughingstock of all my people. They mock me in song all day long. He has filled me with bitter herbs and given me gall to drink. He has broken my teeth with gravel. He has trampled me down in the dust. I have been deprived of peace. I have forgotten what prosperity is. So I say, my neighbor is gone, my splendor is gone, and all that I'd hoped for from the Lord. I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I well remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore I will wait for him. Now the lament goes on with those themes. I remember from my childhood singing that great hymn of faith, Great is thy faithfulness, and thinking what a profound and marvelous testimony of faith that is. And it certainly is. I did not know when I was first singing that song that it emerged from the center of the center of the Lamentations. Not only from the Lamentations themselves, but from the central lament, Lament 3, and not only that, but from the near center of that lament. And what you have is a song reflecting the faithfulness of God in so many good ways, coming from a context in which the world has fallen apart. You can see through the rest of the verses of Lament number 3, all of these things are being said again, what has happened to us and how that we have fallen and how things have gone awry for us and how life has turned on its heel and everything is destruction and destitution. What is also true in Lament number 3 is that there's a greater sense that God has initiated this and that it's not the last chapter to be spoken. That there is still something yet to come out of this difficulty, out of this disaster, out of this pain, torture, and suffering, that this is not the final word that will take place, but rather one step along a journey that has not yet reached its best results. Here's the end of Lament 3. Lord, you have heard their insults and all their plots against me, what my enemies whisper and mutter against me all day long. Look at them, sitting or standing, they mock me in their songs. Pay them back with what they deserve, O Lord, for what their hands have done. Put a veil over their hearts, and they may curse, their curse may be on them. Pursue them in anger and destroy them from under the heavens of the Lord. Notice the confidence that this lament comes to. Whereas Lament 1 just said, oh, woe is me, why did this happen? See, all my children are gone, man, am I in pain. And Lament 2 was the picture from heaven saying, this has happened for good reason, and the curses of the covenant are kicking in. Now in Lament 3, there's this sense of, we're in it together, Lord. And what's happening to them is a reflection on you. And I know that you're bigger than this, and I know that there's something ahead. There's an outcome still ahead. This is the high point of the five laments. It's the most intricately developed of all of the laments in that sense of being a more finely tuned acrostic poem, but it's also more comprehensive than any of the others, almost as if all of the themes that are probed in the other laments are now brought into together this one lament and flowing through its many lyrical lines. Now the voice and perspective is that of a human man who functions in much the same role as the widow in Lament 1. Here the difference, though, is that the man is much more aware of the struggles that are going on, but also the struggles that are going on in the heart of God as well. Yahweh is one who is wrestling with what to do, not only knowing that this judgment is the natural and responsible outcome of the curses of the covenant, the Sinai covenant, but knowing that this cannot be the end of things. This cannot be the last chapter. Something more needs to take place. How can this terrible judgment come out in a different tune, a different song, a different note or melody, a different color or shade? How can we make what all evil has happened turn into blessing and hope and prosperity? So through lament number 3, there's much more of an anticipation of God's grace yet to come and the hope that it will be the final word spoken to this horrible turn of affairs, that this is not the last word, but prosperity will return and the renewal of the relationship between God and God's people. Once again, that key theme is that Yahweh has actively accosted Jerusalem to tear it down through, of course, the actions of the Babylonian armies. But this has happened because God's people have forgotten who they are and whose they are, that they belong not to themselves but to the God who has saved them, has brought them into the promised land. These things are all a result of the curses of the Sinai covenant coming to pass, but the covenant is bigger than the curses. And so we're going to see more on those themes in the next looks, the next two laments, and in our reflections on the whole of these things.